Thanks for downloading this podcast, which is for personal use only. All contents are copyright Radio Show Limited and must not be reproduced, rebroadcast, or used in any form without permission. For contact details, go to www.radiolemon.com. RadioLeMans.com, the home of endurance racing.
Hello there, I'm John Hindorf, and this is another RadioLeMans.com special. And today, talking about something that we all really take for granted. And in the motorsport industry, we really shouldn't. I'm talking about our hearing. Now, clearly, what I do on radio, I have to have my hearing working 100%, and it really is something that I just can't imagine being without. And yet, in the motorsport industry, we keep putting ourselves in very, very grave danger and really putting our hearing quite literally at risk. I'm delighted to say that from Ear Everything Inc., Dawn Finn is with me. She is an audiologist and she's worked with a number of series drivers and indeed people who work within the motorsport industry and other industries too, just to understand the problem and how to protect without ruining our audio experience of being at the racetrack. Dawn, thanks first of all for talking to us. I mean, is it fair to say that people in motorsport, people in music as well perhaps, are slightly blasé about their hearing and perhaps don't take the risks that we put ourselves into quite as seriously as we should?
Yes. Thank you, John. Thank you for having me here. I think that the motorsports industry, the drivers, they feel invincible. There is a feeling of invincibility. Mm. And so because it's not like a broken arm where you feel the hurt and need to go to the doctor and have it fixed the next day, it's something that happens over a long period of time. So we really need to pay attention to our overall exposure. Hearing loss is simply a function of intensity, how loud is the sound, versus duration, how long do we need to be there. So when I explain that to the drivers and the crew, there's a misnomer that they only need to protect their hearing when they're in the car or near the pit lane. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that they're outside, tented out next to generators. There's other series on the track. So it's throughout the entire day that we need to make more attention to protecting our hearing.
So you think they've kind of got the message that when you get into a racing car, you know, the first thing that goes in, even before the balaclava goes on for most people, they would never think about going on the track without some kind of ear defence in. Now, in fairness, a lot of that comes down to the fact that they're hearing their pits-to-car radio through that as well. But that they've kind of got the message for.
Correct. Now, the fit of the earpiece is super, super important. Yes, we want it to be comfortable for them. But we also want it to be isolating. If I could create a seal, an acoustic seal, separating the sound on the outside from the sound they want to hear on the inside, their crew and pit communications, they need less volume from the radio to overpower that outside noise. And yes, a lot of them, they would never get in the car without something in their ears. Unfortunately, a lot of them have not been educated as to what makes a better earpiece for them.
Let's talk about that in just a moment, but you've made a great point there, and I hadn't really thought about it, because clearly, if you put some badly fitting ear wear, for want of a better word, into your ear, and you're using that to listen to the pits-to-car radio, or even your stereo, let's be honest, and many of us carry personal music players, then in order to hear that crisply and clearly, if that's been corrupted by the outside noise, what do? You turn it up. And that's the worst thing possible, isn't it?
Correct. Exactly. Because now you're just putting 110 to 115 decibels of sound pressure level inside your ear canal.
Yeah.
The only control we leave them with, the wearer, the driver, the crew guy, the musician, is their volume control. Yeah. And I want to take that out of the equation. I want to help them listen at lower volume levels that extends their safe listening time. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's not rocket science. But unfortunately, in the racing industry, they've been provided with either universal fit foam ear pieces, whether they're earplugs or driver ear sets. And they're not terrible. They do a good job of blocking out if, and that's a big if, they fit their ear right. And that's where the custom comes in. The other flaw that I've seen over the years of working in motorsports is there are semi custom molded earpieces available.
Hang on, how can you? Surely it's either a bespoke job or it's not a bespoke job.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. But if you walk into one of the radio trucks, they have small, medium, large, extra large. And it sort of fits, but if it's not creating that seal, again, all we're leaving them with is the volume control to overpower that outside noise.
I've heard it said that ears are like fingerprints, that no two people have the same ears, and probably your left and right ear wouldn't be exactly the same, so it's not a mirror image one side to another. I mean, is that true?
Yes, absolutely correct. Everybody has a unique shaped ear canal.
Well,
there's so much to it. There's the tragus, the aperture, the opening of the ear canal. Some people have longer ear canals. Some people have shorter ear canals. Some people have more sensitive ear canals. So,
is that why some people really struggle with just normal audio headphones? They can't keep them in, or they fall into their ear and then they drop out again?
Yes. And that's the complaint I hear a lot. It's a large percentage of my business is just satisfying the physical fit aspect and the comfort of the person wearing them. The do-it-yourself kits are also out there, but I'm not a big fan of those because if you're doing the ear impression, are you getting down deep enough into the ear canal to provide proper isolation? And did you have the opportunity to look inside your ear to make sure that you weren't pushing any foreign objects further into your or ear wax? You don't want to jam that up against your eardrum.
Well, also, that's going to, presumably, that would affect and distort the impression that you're taking.
Yes.
I mean, if the ear wax is not there when you put the earplug in, which, you know, ears are self-cleaning, actually. I once had a doctor say to me, you should never try to put anything in your ear that's smaller than your elbow, which I thought was quite an interesting thing. And, you know, a lot of people will try and clean that ear. That's not necessarily the right thing to do.
Everybody always asks me about Q-tips, and I think the real big danger with Q-tips is that they leave little traces of cotton in there, which makes your ear think that there's something in there that shouldn't be in there, and then wax gets produced.
Yeah.
The other dangers of that are just simply pushing that too far and maybe hurting your ear canal because it gets down to a deeper, more sensitive spot in your ear canal, or perhaps puncturing your eardrum, which I have heard stories about that.
We'll get into the technique of what you do in a moment, but I want to touch, first of all, not necessarily in motorsport, but there is a prevalence nowadays and a bigger call on people that have noise-cancelling earpieces or headphones. Now, I've tried some of these, and, you know, in certain circumstances, particularly on airplanes, you see a lot of people with the over-the-ear noise-cancelling headphones, and they kind of work, but what it always seems to me is that I always seem to need to turn them up louder than I really want to.
Yes, active noise-cancelling earpieces, they were designed for a business traveler. A business traveler that's on an airplane, and that hum of the airplane engine, 500 hertz and below, it's an easy one to cancel out with that technology. Unfortunately, if you're not creating that seal with your ear, physically separating the sound on the outside from the sound on the inside, you're not encouraged to turn the volume down. So yes, I would say you're spot on with having to turn it up a little
bit. How do they work? Effectively, they're producing a, all because I work in the industry and I edit sound, I know that sound is a wave pattern.
It's
effectively adding itself into it, so surely then that you're giving it more volume to start with.
Yes, funny, I was having that conversation earlier with some engineers on a race team. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So in effect, you're actually starting from a higher volume that you don't need to. There are in-ear earbud type headphones that do make that seal and have different types of rubber in them for different ears. Again, they're not going to be completely personal, but they're passive. So is that, in that respect, so long as you're getting a decent seal, is that better for you than an active noise cancelling?
I would say so. It really is. If you can create that seal separating the sound on the outside from the sound on the inside, your propensity is to turn the volume lower.
Mm-hmm.
You get that sensation of hearing the sound at a volume that's comfortable to you. You also get a more clearer representation of the sound because it is not being polluted by the outside.
Yeah. And you don't have to turn it up so it distorts because, let's be honest, little speakers can only take so much. When they're in your ear. That's very interesting. Now, you were talking about cancelling out 500 hertz. So That's quite technical. I mean, we're talking on a technical level there. What are the sound levels in terms of the frequencies that do the damage, the most damage to your ear? Obviously, any volume of anything, if it gets high enough, is going to do damage. But what particularly are we looking at, let's say, in the motorsport industry, where we're trying to get rid of those or protect ourselves from what?
Well, it's a little bit different than that. So hearing loss is simply a function of intensity. How loud is the sound versus duration? How long are you there? It is not frequency dependent. So you will not get a different hearing loss from working around Formula One cars than you would from working around Indy cars or American Le Mans series cars.
Or even big earth moving equipment that is very low revving.
Yes, absolutely. If you're the drummer in your church band or the construction worker or the guy that works in the factory, they will have the same type of hearing loss. It's called noise-induced hearing loss. And I mentioned a musician, and music is not noise, but your ears don't know the difference. The frequencies that are affected are between 3,000 hertz and 6,000 hertz. High, soft-pitched sounds, or high-pitched sounds. Unfortunately, the consonants in English are soft, high-pitched sounds, and that's where wives tell husbands that they have selective hearing, because because they're hearing that they talk, honey, I heard that you said something, but I didn't hear what you said. Mm-hmm. And it's those distinguishing features of speech that reside in that high-frequency region. And the loss happens there simply because our auditory system is set up the way that it is. The cochlea is shaped like a snail shell, and it is that first bend in that snail shell that is the wear and tear, the welcome mat of your auditory system.
Very good.
So that's what gets beat up, and that corresponds to the high pitch sounds, but specifically between 3,000 and 6,000 hertz. It shows up the same way every time.
So whether it was the scream of a jet engine or the low rumble of a bass guitar, or as I say, an earth moving, if you're going to get hearing loss, it might come from a different source, but it will have the same end result.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
But what you're talking about there, though, Dawn, is something that's fundamental to how we communicate between each other. So it's not just like saying, oh, you might not be able to hear the snare drum on your favourite Motown track when you're listening. We're talking about the fundamental day-to-day living here that is going to be affected in a quite brutal way.
I try and remind all of these guys, the drivers, the crew, the safety workers, the officials, the broadcasters, everyone. They're working so hard now for their quality of life later. Mm-hmm. It's over a period of time that this hearing loss will rear its ugly head and affect your ability to function in group situations and background noise, which everybody tells me. Everybody, 100% of people have difficulty in group situations and background noise. But when your brain cannot sense the soft, high-pitched sounds, and in English, the consonants and their distinguishing features of speech, it all sounds like mumbling.
Yes.
That background noise overwhelms your auditory system. There's a more technical way to describe it, but it overwhelms your auditory system, and it's not ready to hear the soft, sensitive part.
So effectively, it's tuning that out in that respect.
It's overwhelming the filters. We have these things called auditory filters, and they sort where these sounds should reside so that your brain can integrate. Your ears are simply collectors of sound. Your brain is the processing center. So my message is that we have to retain the health of our collectors of sound, our outer ear, our ear canal, our eardrum, the three small bones behind our eardrum, and our cochlea, so that effective auditory messages can be transferred to the brain, comprehended, integrated, loudness can be adapted to. Mm. All of those things go away with hearing loss. It's not just loss of audibility. Some of the other side effects of hearing loss, loud noise functioning, is tinnitus.
Yes.
Or tinnitus.
Yeah.
Dialectical difference, wherever you're from, you say it differently. That high pitch buzzing or ringing, some people have it as a water rushing sound, some people have it as crickets. Those are the little hair cells dying. And some of them are dying, and the way that the hair cells send nerve passages to the brain is they do a bending or a shearing, like the waves come in on the beach and then the grass moves.
Yeah.
So that's what sends the signal to the brain.
Wow.
But if your cochlea isn't sensitive enough or there's damage, it's not going to send those efficient messages to the brain. Right. And so it all can't be compiled.
So that's fascinating because I don't think people realize what we're talking about. And often, of course, the sad thing is that by the time you realize that you've got a hearing problem, the vast majority of the damage is done. However, I'm sure you would tell me it's never too late nor too early to start protecting your ears. And we'll talk about that as well in a moment. But if we can just take an analogy of your sight, which most people, I think, would have an easier time visualizing. So what you're saying is over a period of time, it's like putting darker and darker glasses on to the point where you actually can't make out any of the detail around. Maybe just shapes, maybe just difference of light and shade, but the detail has all gone completely.
I would say it's a fair analogy.
Yeah, okay.
Usually I don't like to compare eyes and
ears.
Indeed. Because people expect hearing aids, which is the only thing we have to remediate hearing
yes.
loss at the present time. They relate hearing aids and the difficulty. Why isn't it as easy as putting on a pair of glasses?
Yeah.
But the way that you explained it, I would definitely make that comparison.
So let's then talk about how we protect ourselves. Talking to Dawn Finn from Ear Everything Inc. about the very real importance of looking after, as we know now, the sound collectors, our ears. The brain's still going to work. The brain's still going to try and decipher what it's getting. But if it's getting garbage, then it simply can't cope with that and it will not be able to work. So what you do, and indeed I've been through this process, so I know, is what? And what is the most important first part?
I think education is the first part.
Yeah.
Got to make people want to do something for themselves because it's not regulated in our industry of motorsport.
Which is bizarre, isn't it?
If you worked in a factory, the government would insist that you participated in a hearing conservation program. There is nothing that exists like that currently in motorsport, at any level of motorsport that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. There are, or the music industry either, we should
correct,
say.
Correct, absolutely correct. Now, I'm trying to change that, or at least keep that change happening. I do believe at some point in time there was some audiologist that was in fact taking hearing tests, but I don't know that they stayed around very long to monitor for change. So education is first. Baseline audiogram, you got to find out where your hearing is today so that we could potentially monitor it for change. And that also validates our choices for hearing protection. Mm-hmm. But when I come to a racetrack, I talk to people, I educate them, and I show them my products. And it's not a full line of products. I don't need a lot of products. Mostly, I just need it to fit well. And there's only two real products that I use here at the racetrack, and one is a trackside earplug, mm-hmm. and it is it's an earplug that has a filter in it that reduces equally across all the frequencies. So when I tell these guys that they don't have to lose the quality of what they're listening to, just the intensity of what they're listening to, that's appealing.
And the key thing about that, Dawn, is we see people, and great. I see little kids walking around with the big ear defenders on, clearly making a good seal to their head. I see guys working in the pit lane that have that, or obviously sometimes they've keyed into a walkie-talkie, various brand names of those that guys wear. And they're great, because clearly they are ear defenders, they are keeping the noise out. But the problem is, you can't have a conversation with anybody. You walk up to them, what's the first thing you do? You take one of them off, which means you're not being protected.
Exactly. And that's why that passive earplug that has the filter in it, it encourages you to wear hearing protection the moment you get out of your car in the morning, as soon as that first car goes on the racetrack, and all that noise, and all day long. Because again, the misnomer is that they only needed to protect their hearing when they were either getting in the car or working in pit lane.
And the key thing about this is that this is a custom fit. You take the impressions, and we'll talk about that, how you do that and what you use to do that in a moment. But it's not a solid piece of plastic, rubber, gunge, or whatever. Your ear can breathe, and you've got these filters in them.
Yes, essentially it retains the natural resonant characteristics. Your ear canal is essentially a tube closed at one end, so it has some acoustic characteristics
yes.
to it. You start shoving a foam earplug in there, and you do a good job of separating the sound on the outside from what's happening on the inside, but you block it all off and you're changing the acoustic characteristics of that environment. This passive earplug maintains that. So it really just, it keeps the EQ the same of your environment, and it just feels like somebody has turned the volume down.
And you offer that with a variety of filters in at different decibel levels, depending on what suits people and how clearly how noisy an environment they're in.
Absolutely. So depending on what your job is and how much attenuation you need, there are three different levels of the attenuation. There's a 9, a 15, and a 25, and that's decibel of cut, so take away. And
let's remember, everybody should know, decibel is not a linear scale.
It is not. It's exponential. It grows exponential, and it reduces in the same way. It only takes 3 decibels of more energy to double the intensity.
Yes.
So 25 dB may not seem like a lot. It's not a big number, except when it comes to sound,
It's
quite a big number.
Now, I've got a set of these passive earplugs at 25 dB, which is the biggest you do, and everybody might think, well, that's a bit excessive, and how can you hear anything? But I'll tell everyone now, it's perfect. I can wear them all day if I need to. I also wear them on my motorcycle, and it is I've told you this before, it's absolutely transformed my motorcycle experience, because two things. I know that I'm protecting my ear, but I can still hear the bike. I can still hear what's going on around me, and I have got a helmet that's Bluetoothed up to my phone. I can still make phone calls and receive phone calls on my telephone, and I actually hear it better with the earplugs in than I did before with the wind noise. And I'm not sure people would have believed that in the first place.
It's your proximity to the sound source, and that's what the guys and the girls and the drivers and the crew got, everybody like so much about them. Nobody ever offered them anything where they could still hear and actually improve their ability to hear with the presence of background noise or the noise we have at the racetrack.
So let's get into the actual physics of making an impression.
Okay.
What do you use to do it, and how do you do it?
Okay, so first and foremost, I'm a licensed and certified audiologist. So I have a master's degree in audiology, and I've been trained to do these ear impressions. First, I inspect the ear canal, and I ask a couple of important questions about balance and dizziness and any ear surgery. So good visual inspection. Then I place something called an otoblock, and that is just a little protective piece, and I set that deeper into the ear canal. And then I mix up my silicone material, and I inject it via a syringe into the ear.
I found that quite pleasant. I know some people find it a little bit odd. You do one ear at a time, just in case anybody feels a little queasy. But I actually found it quite restful and relaxing.
Most people do find it relaxing, and some people actually enjoy the experience. You never want anybody to not enjoy that experience. I feel, forgive me for sounding a little cocky, but I do feel like I take a very good ear impression.
Mm-hmm.
I work with these guys now for 15 years, or in the racing industry for 15 years, and I get it. I understand what they need. I understand what they want from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I take a really good ear, and a good product needs a good ear impression.
Well, it's only going to be as good. It's like computers, garbage in, garbage out.
Yes, exactly. So
has the fact that materials have changed over the years, Dawn, and we have more access to more pliable and more long-lasting compounds now, has that changed how you do it, and indeed just the longevity and the quality of what you do?
Yes, absolutely. Now, I am not an expert in the way that silicones are being developed, but I do prefer a 100% medical-grade silicone, so I order from labs that provide that. There are other materials that tend to change based on your body chemistry, and to me, that's not really fair to know that and get you a product that will do that. So it also changes texture. It starts to pull away from your ear canal, and it discolors. It just doesn't make for a very nice product. So I want a nice, soft silicone. I want a durable silicone because I want it to last for you.
Yeah. But when you take the impression, that doesn't then come back as an earplug. That becomes a mold, effectively.
Correct. Yes, the ear impression. And then when it gets to the lab, they create an investment or a negative. So I've taken a positive, that's the ear impression, and then they create a negative, which is the void space of the ear impression, and then they utilize the final material, the final silicone.
Now, in my case, we've got the passive earplugs with the attenuator in, but that could easily have been a very simple earpiece to listen to my producer talking to my ear. could have been a more complicated set of earpieces, two, three, perhaps different small mic speakers for a musician as an on-stage monitor. And we see many more of that. I think when we talk about that, if people think about watching their favourite pop star on stage and see what they're wearing now, this is what we're talking about. This is the kind of technology that's allowed that to happen.
Yes, and regardless of what product we ultimately get, I wouldn't change the way that I take an ear impression.
Yes, exactly.
It needs to get to a specific depth in your ear canal to really create that isolation, and it needs to fit right. Mm. And if it goes to a poor lab that doesn't make good physically fitting products, that doesn't do us any good either.
No,
it starts with a good ear impression. Once again, going back to those do-it-yourself kits,
yes.
That's why I'm not a big fan of them. You're not going to get a successful product from an unsuccessful ear impression.
It's like trying to do a dental impression at home on your own versus having a dentist do it for you. The guy who knows what he's doing is always going to do it better. And let's be honest, your ears, it's a fiddly thing, and you can't really see what you do. You can't see your ears.
Exactly.
So, okay, let's assume we've done all that, and you've built either a passive earplug or some kind of headphone type application. I mean, is there any limit to what you can do in terms of what you can build into one of these custom earpieces, if you like?
No, they're pretty incredible. I mean, I guess it has to fit within,
yes,
there,
course.
Right?
Yeah.
But there are earphone manufacturers that have figured out a way to put 8 little tiny speakers in each one of their ear canals. Not necessary, but I think engineering-wise, if you're looking about how much you can fit in there, there are also a manufacturer that have embedded microphones in the external portion of the earphone.
Really?
Well, it's from musician aspect. Remember what you were saying about pulling,
yeah,
an earphone out. They want to hear that outside ambient.
Oh, okay.
A musician wants that. The race car driver does not.
No, that's a good point.
But the musician wants that. And when you simply pull,
so it's not a dead sound,
correct,
to them. They're actually hearing the ambience of the hall or the,
correct,
room they're playing in.
Correct. With little tiny microphones that are EQ'd to an open ear canal. It's pretty phenomenal. It opens up that musician's head. Your ears are not 50-50. It's not like half the information comes in one side and half the information, and that's it. Your ears are 40-40, and you're 40% right, 40% left, and your brain puts the rest of that signal,
really,
together. It's called binaural summation. Binaural being two ears and the sum of the sound from both of them. So when you can deliver the sound to both your ears, you can even further reduce the volume and listen safer longer.
And of course, let's be honest, our ears, although people probably won't realize this, but try walking around in a darkened room. Your ears help you position yourself within space. I mean, you talked about balance earlier on, obviously your inner ear and all of that, but just actually being able to hear, and now it makes perfect sense, of course, what you're saying about the musician. If they were only hearing themselves and the band, it would be sterile. They would have no idea what the room was doing.
I don't want to name drop.
Oh, no, please, name drop. We love name dropping.
But those ones with the micro, you're exactly right, because it is a little bit of an isolating experience. Mm. Now, for the race car driver, that's wonderful, because really all he wants to hear and feel is the car and what's happening with his crew information. But a musician who's now interacting with an audience, so Stevie Wonder, right? He wears the ones with the microphones on the outside.
He does.
And exactly. He told the man who manufactures that, you gave me my vision back on stage.
Yes.
So you are spot on with that.
That's really interesting. Now, that's great. Everybody, so we've explained that. Actually, I should say as well, that this all sounds very expensive. And I'm sure people are going, yeah, I'll take the $5 foam ones, thanks very much. And some of these guys will spend £500, £600, £700, $1,000 on a helmet, which you would expect, on fireproof clothing and etc. So at the very base end of what we're talking about here, for a set of passive earplugs with the attenuators in, bespoke to you, to whoever the person is, absolutely custom built, what we're talking about.
They're less than $200 for those passive, and that's US.
Yeah.
So less than $200, I don't know what that makes it in pounds.
It's about 120, 130 quid. I mean, like $160 is 100 pounds. So.
Okay. And then for the driver or crew, you're less than $300.
With an earphone in it.
Yes, with the speaker in each ear and then wires to connect into either your radio as a crew guy or your helmet as a driver.
So we're talking in real terms about a piece of equipment that's less than half of a helmet, a decent pair of race boots or something like that. We're not talking a huge amount. Now, how long would these, typically, would you say that these products should last, though?
The passive earplugs should last forever. There are no there are no moving parts on them. So there's really
And do your ears not change once you get to adulthood?
Some people's change more than others, but it's pretty stable after you get through your teen growth spurts. Mm-hmm. Some people say your nose and your ears never stop growing, but I have not experienced a lot of refitting people because of that.
My nose and my ear hair doesn't stop growing. I'm not sure about that, but that's a whole different story.
That's another show. Yes,
exactly. That's a whole other show. So great, durable, long lasting, and you know, potentially lasting a lifetime of racing career. So there's no reason for people not to do it. Before I let you go, and you've given us a lot of your time, so thank you. I do want to talk about another side of what you do, which is in monitoring what goes on inside the car, because this is fascinating to me. You've done a lot of work with the Open Wheel Series here in the States, the Izod IndyCar Series. Tell us a little bit about that before we just wrap up on the ear defense thing.
Well, I've had the pleasure and the honor of being the audiologist for the IndyCar Series for the last 10 years or so, and I got to work on their earpiece accelerometer program. So Delphi Motorsports, which is no longer, but Delphi Motorsports had a sensor, a tri-axle accelerometer, so a G-force sensor on three axes that they were looking to try and put in an earpiece. And I happened to come along at the right time and met those people, and I was able to put their sensor in my earpiece. So every IndyCar driver, it's a mandatory piece of safety equipment.
Really?
And so it measures acceleration on three axes. Now, I'm not privy to the data, but when those guys have an accident, their head moves separate from the helmet, separate from the car. So we put these in their earpieces because they're coupled to their head. For as much as I want to make a seal for protecting their hearing, it locks it into their ear nice, and they get real-time data as to how the driver's
real-time?
Well, maybe I said that wrong. They can download the information from the accident data recorder.
Okay, got you.
So I apologize if I said
that wrong.
But
that doesn't affect how your earplugs would work, so the guys can still hear the crew guys and everything
Absolutely.
Like that. That's not instead of, that's
no.
as well as.
Yes.
So this thing must be teeny.
The little accelerometer, yes, and they're making them smaller too.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it smaller because these guys have to wear helmets.
Yes,
and it is kind of putting a square peg in a round hole. I've done a lot of modifying of earpieces over time, but I'm very proud. They've gotten some really great data. It has helped the doctors and the medical staff understand how hard of a hit some of those guys take. Mm. The outside of turn two on a windy day at IMS collects a lot of cars, and they can tell what the G-force was at the level of their head.
Just fantastic. That is a spin-off, clearly, and a great spin-off of safety-wise for monitoring guys who've had accidents. And, you know, we push safety forward all the time. But at the basic level, it doesn't matter what side of motorsport you're taking part in, whether it's international or national, getting started early. I said right at the start of this, there's no start point, no finish point for this. So it doesn't matter how long you've been in the business, or it doesn't matter how little you've been in the business, presumably doing something about it will make a difference.
Yes. My opening statement to most people is I'd like to help you keep the hearing you have today for as long as possible while you continue to participate in a loud environment, whether it be motorsports or factory work or music, construction, doesn't matter. It's never too late in my eyes.
Dawn, thanks for the time that you spent with us today. Again, I'll say that the pieces that you made for me fit perfectly under a standard helmet for motorcycle, and I don't feel as though that I'm isolated from the outside world. In fact, I feel I'm much more a part of it than I was when I just used to wear rubber or foam ones. We can presumably find out more about the business on the internet. Give the website a plug.
Sure, thank you. It's www.eareverything.com. That's EAREverything.com.
Dawn, thanks for the great work that you've done with everybody in motorsport, and long may it continue.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.